RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Damien O'Connor is a former Minister of Agriculture, Minister of Biosecurity, Minister of Trade and Export Growth, and Minister of Land Information under Jacinda Ardern. His background in farming and adventure tourism drives his view that we need well-paid, sustainable jobs and industry growth to improve our future. He is a passionate advocate for rural communities and for a thriving agricultural sector. Damien O'Connor has also been a vocal supporter of New Zealand's organic sector. So we've invited him on to comment on the current government's plans to deregulate GMOs and biotechnology, an issue that has remained controversial with New Zealanders for more than 20 years. Currently, he is Labour spokesperson for Trade, Land Information, Associate Foreign Affairs and Associate Transport. Damien, welcome to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
Kia ora, look, thanks very much. Good to be here, Paul.
Okay, first question. Philosophically, where do you sit regards genetic engineering, GMOs?
Well, look, I mean, it's playing an important role across the globe, I guess, GMOs, genetic engineering now, and the new techniques, the CRISPR one. I'm no science expert, but it has evolved over the last 20 years, and from what was some pretty scary stuff, and people were concerned about, you know, transgenic work that might deliver us weird and unintended consequences, that kind of spooked a lot of people. We as a country decided that we'd take a precautionary approach, and so we would still have some research going on in the labs, but that, you know, there'd be no commercial trials out in the field because we're not quite sure what that might result in. And we have a non-GMO kind of status across the globe, selling our food that helps us. But of course, with new technologies emerging, then the question of whether it's GMO or not, and the Europeans have been through that process. They've said that CRISPR was, and now it's not. This is gene editing. So it's a bit of a muddle at the moment. And I guess it is something that we do have to discuss, but I think with a very cautious approach.
Yeah, National has referenced Australia's and the European Union's adoption of gene technology and claim that we could be left behind. What do you make of that?
No. I mean, look, we feed about 40 million people across the globe. So, while we're big players in dairy, about 30% of the traded dairy product, most dairy industries feed their domestic population and trade very little. We trade a lot, and we trade a lot in meat as well. So we're not huge players in terms of feeding the world. Those countries have used gene technology for mainly for crops, and of course the Roundup Ready stuff, which is really designed to allow Monsanto to spray a hell of a lot of glyphosate across crops, both for weed control and then to desiccate the crop, that is, it make it easier when it's harvested. That has been applied to some of the crops. We don't have large-scale cropping here, so we haven't been in the same game as them. We have a pastoral system, and, you know, how that would affect our pastoral system is the approach we have to take.
I see our organic industry is worth close to $1 billion, and that's really just the beginning, isn't it? And we have a kind of a market position as a quality provider. How hard should we hang on to that?
Look, it's a precious advantage that we have. We just in government, we brought in a piece of organic legislation which kind of standardised our whole organic system. That is the certification system, and allows us now to really trade with just about every other country across the globe. We had our own system; it was a bit muddled, complex. So we moved to kind of standardise that and make it easier for people contemplating organic production to know what they had to do, and that's really important. So the view is that organic export sector and the domestic sector will grow significantly following that piece of legislation. To come back to where we are, we actually early 2000s, we had an inquiry. I was the chair of the select committee into organic production, you know, what was its advantage, you know, would the premiums, and it was about 20% premium at the time, would that hold out? Look, since that time, the sector has grown significantly. It's kind of become more mainstream. The premiums are maybe not quite as high as 20%, but they're still worthwhile. And, you know, so Fonterra's doing organic, Zespri's doing organics, organic apples, wine industry. Things have moved in that direction. Of course, you know, the vast majority of large-scale food production has been slowly taking up GM and GMOs through canola and wheat and barley and stuff like that. So we've just been growing the organic sector in an organic way. It was, pardon the pun, but it's been boosted, we hope, now by, you know, more consistent legislation and standards. The question for New Zealand as we move forward, why will people want to purchase product from New Zealand? If it's just the same as that from every other country in the world, then price will be the deciding factor. Now, there's been a study done recently saying that actually country of origin is still really important when it comes to people buying their food. And we have a trusted brand. People know if you buy something from New Zealand, it's top quality, it's safe. You know, it comes from systems that have integrity. Very, very important. The question of whether it's GMO or not, you know, that probably hasn't been an issue because it's all been non-GMO. And I've asked in the market as I've been travelling around as trade minister previously to some of those people selling meat, selling dairy, selling horticulture, does being non-GMO give us an advantage or give you an advantage when it comes, when you knock on the door of some of your customers? And they said, hell yes. We don't have to explain whether it is or isn't. So, you know, we're in a good position, and I think we should, you know, protect it.
We're a small country as well, aren't we? And we really can't compete in this arena anyway. Can we realistically?
No, we can't. We can't compete on large-scale food production. You know, dairy, we're pretty efficient at it. But again, you go to California, or you go to South America, you know, they produce, they've got dairy farms that are huge, massive, even in China. So we'll never compete on scale. We have to compete on quality.
You know, I was kind of thinking about in the global biotech arena, I should be more specific. We are just a minnow, and it's just a nice to have for technocrats in the end at our level, isn't it, really?
Well, I mean, there's a whole lot of scientists who are excited about it. They would love to get their hands in fact, they can do. There's experimentation going on GM in the labs in New Zealand, but they want to expand that and see whether, you know, their experiments will be field ready, I guess. And so they are pushing for it big time. There are some commercial interests always pushing for it. But the question I ask is, what does this mean for our consumers or the people who are looking to buy our product, you know, offshore over the next 50 years?
Sounds a bit like some politicians are being dazzled by this. You've got plenty of in-the-house experience, so to speak. Are they equipped to really understand what this means? I think that's a fair enough question.
I mean, you know, none of us are experts. There might be a few scientists who know more than I do, and but yes, it is being dazzled. The challenge across agriculture is that we've rapidly grown our efficiency, our levels of production, you know, per cow, milk, and per hectare for some of our crops and stuff like that, and we're kind of reaching a bit of a ceiling. And of course, if people pay too much for the land, they put pressure on themselves. The banks are saying, look, you've got to do more. And so they're looking for ways to increase their production. Often it's not their profitability, which is ultimately should be the goal, not production. But so there's a drive to increase production, and they think the next significant step is through gene technology. And, you know, so there's a momentum. And the current coalition government have picked up on that. You've got a couple of farmers in there who just want more ryegrass or better ryegrass to produce more milk. And the question of, well, does that affect the consumer's view of our milk products? They haven't really asked that.
What do the farmers tell you, the rural people tell you, the industry people tell you, Damien? What's their attitude to this?
I think farmers on the ground are, you know, probably 50-50. Industry people who, you know, industry organisations are funded by production. That's the more milk, then the more funding they get and the more they can do for their sector. So they kind of want this next step up in production because it will give them more funding. Some of it's as basic as that, but there are others who think that, you know, we may be left behind if we don't take it up. Again, hopefully the government will oversee and drive a sensible, rational and balanced consultation on this. They haven't on many other things, so I fear that this might be predetermined and they're just pushing this through without thinking of the long-term consequences.
The public should have a say on this, shouldn't they? Big time, because ultimately,
yeah,
it could affect everyone. And, you know, some of the experimentation done to date have been epic fails, it's fair to say. They never talk about those.
No, they don't. And look, there's been this ryegrass, which has been trialled in the US, and the farmers are hoping it's going to be this magical ryegrass that produces more milk and meat and everything. And, you know, the interim feedback that I had as minister that was that it wasn't that successful. They want to bring that ryegrass trial back to New Zealand and put it out in the paddock and try it here. You know, there are always unintended consequences of this technology, and that's the thing that we have to be careful about. You know, there'll be a proposition that, well, you know, you can have non-GMO and you can have GMO alongside one another. You know, we'll have some protocols and all the rest of it, but actually it gets really, really muddled. And, you know, most of the stuff, if you're buying corn products or anything made from corn or from soy, you're probably consuming a bit of a GM product and or GM technology. Ultimately, consumers have to read, and you need really good eyes to read what's on the packets these days.
You do.
Yep. Yeah, and so if you're consuming some of those grain products and they've come from overseas, chances are, unless it's clearly branded non-GMO, that's some GM in there already. And so people will say, well, no one's been harmed by it. As I say, my focus is on identifying the consumers who want to buy non-GMO offshore and then paying more for it. That's where New Zealand should be positioned.
And there's also a potential, isn't there, to get caught in a cycle of proprietary IP and royalties and that environment, which could really restrict incredibly the growers and our ability to market ourselves in a particular way.
Absolutely. And if you go back a number of years, I had a letter written to me when there were still letters from a priest who was working in Southeast Asia and complaining that the seed that some of the people, these were peasant farmers, had purchased, of course, at that time wasn't able to reproduce itself. So they had to continually buy seed to produce their crop, whereas in the past they'd buy seed and then retain some of that seed to grow the crop the following year. And so this was the kind of commercial drivers in early days of GMO and GM crops. And that kind of unethical rollout of gene technology, you know, has contributed to people's negative perception of it. And so, you know, we don't want that. We don't want the company stepping in and bullying us and telling us what to do. If it's a commercial proposition, then it has to be open, transparent, and be of value to us, to our farmers, and to the country.
How much does the Labor policy on this differ from the current coalition government? Can you tell us?
We took a very precautionary approach to it. We have said that there needs to be a discussion on this, and we welcome the discussion, an open one. As I say, the coalition government hasn't done things in an open way in many other areas. That's why we are concerned. And I think that, you know, we haven't said absolutely no. We use gene technology, as we know, in medicine. It's very, very important. But when it comes to food production, it's not just about what we consume as individuals. It's actually, as a food producing nation, it's where it leaves us as an export nation in the long term. And we're wary of the current approach taken by the coalition government.
A couple of quick questions to end on. Should we be playing with nature like this at all? I know there's medicine, but when it comes to food chains, et cetera, and, you know, our health in that respect, should we be fiddling around? I guess it's another philosophical question here.
It is a philosophical one, and I guess over the centuries there have been different evolutions in technology, more basic than this, but nonetheless, you know, people have probably been wary of that progress.
But editing genes, using CRISPR, actually editing genes, that's next level, right?
It is. It certainly is. Manipulation is. I mean, what you would probably have is you would have some genes switching out, freak genes, and some, you know, hybrids that we've seen that have happened through natural processes. People have identified them, some for better or for worse. And it certainly is getting into an area of dangerous technology when we don't know all the consequences. And I think that on the face of it, we might know what it does, but over time, as either people consume or is there some crossing, which often happens with crops, you know, people are playing around in other more conventional systems to improve production, you know, what does that leave us then? So, yes, it's an unknown area.
Okay, and final question. How do you see our future in our food production and marketing it to the world? Are we on the right track? Obviously, we've got the quality brand, and organic is growing all the time. Is that the route we go?
A pasture-based protein is now quite topical. That is that people are a bit wary of, you know, these big feedlots of the mass scale that we see in other South America through the US and that. And so they're kind of moving away from animal protein because of that, animal welfare issues and standards. We have a pasture-based system where the cows and the animals are outside. It's a pretty natural system that we run as long as we don't push it too hard. People like that. And I think if we continue with those systems, if we don't pay too much for land and we keep our costs down, and farmers can be profitable because we don't subsidise farmers in our country, and that we don't want farmers to be peasants as they are in many places around the world. If we want farmers to be commercially viable and profitable and sustainable, then we have to protect every single advantage we have. And one of those at the moment is being non-GMO. So we move away from that with great caution, in my view, and with potential danger to undermine the advantages that future generations need.
Damien O'Connor, nice to have you on our show. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks, Paul.
Right now, free speech is under heavy attack in New Zealand and overseas, with governments constantly devising new ways to enforce censorship. To make sure you never miss the critical news and breaking stories you rely on, join the RCR mailing list today. Get connected now at realitycheck.radio/email.